The rain seems to have stopped, so maybe we can record this now, except it's not the rain that was stopping us from recording, it was us.
As per usual.
Yeah.
Hi. I'm Portia.
I'm Chloe. We haven't introduced ourselves for ages.
I was literally thinking that, like...
Yeah, the other day.
Yeah.
Me too.
We haven't introduced ourselves for ages because we haven't recorded.
But even in our last, like, I don't know, however many episodes, I feel like we didn't either. I don't know.
Well, anyway, hi, I'm Portia.
And I'm Chloe.
Also, just as a side note, both Chloe and I are part of a couple of, like, Facebook support groups for narcissistic mothers and parents and stuff. And someone on one of the Facebook groups was asking for recommendations on podcasts. So I was like, oh, shameless self-plug. I'll just plug my own podcast. But I use... like my middle name, which is Iris, as my name on Facebook. So someone was like, one of our listeners was on there, and she's like,
is this your podcast?
Is this your podcast? Because it's hosted by Portia and Chloe. No, there's no one called Iris that hosts.
So you look like some weirdo trying to like pretend it's your podcast.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, it's totally, it's me. Like, I own it. Yeah.
So we just drove Ellen to the airport this morning at like 6 a.m.
Chloe gets a glorious 5-week break from her marriage.
Yeah, for 5 weeks married.
She's got women lined out the door waiting for Ellen to leave.
I'm just going to enjoy having the bed to myself.
Chloe is cringingly faithful to her wife.
Shut up. No, that was Why a joke. Am I like, shut up? Like, I'm not faithful. Anyway, Ellen, if you're listening, sweetie, I am faithful.
Shut up. I'm just like airing your guys' dirty laundry, like secretly behind the scenes.
I don't want people to think there's actually dirty laundry.
There isn't. There
is. Okay. Anyway, so yeah, both Portia and I are like super tired, and I think that's probably why it took us so long to start this episode, because we kept trying to start it and then we just get the giggles and like...
I like that we use the fact that we're tired as an excuse when it literally happens every single time we go to start recording, and it's like, because we obviously have to test the audio, so every time we test the audio, we just say random bullshit.
Yeah.
And
and it's usually like nonsense that then makes us laugh, and then we just can't.
And then what we'll do is we'll record like a little tester snippet to see what the audio quality is like, and then we'll just sit there listening to it laughing
at ourselves. We're so full of ourselves.
Anyway, we miss you, Ellen.
Yeah, don't come back racist. Yeah. We all know what Australia is like.
Yeah, there was actually a TikToker that I saw who she's an author of a book essentially talking about what it's like to be a lesbian woman of color who travels, and she talks about like the most racist countries that she's been to. So she did the top 10 most racist countries.
Yeah.
Number, I can't remember where America was, but America was pretty high up because it's America. Number one most racist country that she's visited, bear in mind this is this woman's job to travel, was Australia.
It's not surprising.
Yeah. So just so you guys know, for anybody not in New Zealand / Australia area, Australia is fucking racist. And also New Zealand is pretty racist.
New Zealand
as well.
Is too, yeah.
Like to our own indigenous people.
Yeah.
Like,
and just to any other ethnicity that chooses to live in our country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's like a national myth that New Zealand is like a place of equality, and
I think because we've had instances like we legalized like marriage equality, and we were the first country to give women the right to vote. It's kind of, and we have like a female prime minister, and like, you know, we
and
like,
it was also
have made steps that are good steps forward, but also
it's also, I think it ties into like a national, this is one of the courses that I was doing, but it ties into like a national identity.
Yeah.
So like for us, a lot of our national identity is like a sense of pride is around like equality, and is around the nuclear free movement that was going on. And it paints this picture of like a really positive, equal New Zealand when really behind the scenes there's a lot of fucking issues here.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway. Yeah.
Come visit us.
Yeah.
It's okay.
I mean, it needs work.
It's like okay because we're white. I'm like, it's fine, but like, I'm not. I'm white, so of course it's fine for me.
Yeah. Anyway.
So I think we're going to keep this reasonably brief, but we're really excited about today's episode because we have our first guest, which is super, super exciting.
Very exciting.
And we were so nervous. Like, this poor woman, like, before she joined the Zoom call, we were just, like, fucking around, like, just doing dumb shit. Like,
and then we're like, hold on, just got to pause our dumb jokes and
host this, like, totally professional interview.
Yeah.
But no, it was really, it's really, really good. So we did want to mention that obviously the audio quality won't be the best just because we've just recorded it from Zoom. But and,
I mean, our audio quality is always perfect. So I know that you guys will be disappointed in the not great quality that going to be. But, you know.
Is what it is. But yeah, it was really fun. So we will have a little bit after the interview of how you can find her book. So her name's Amy Huber. She's an author from the States. And yeah, we'll have a link in the bio for her book that you guys can purchase if you want to.
Yeah, so the book is called The Bear. And she essentially wrote, we wanted to do a full episode on what parenting can be like with a narcissistic grandmother, but we kind of wanted to steer away from something that we didn't necessarily have real, like, on hand.
Like, real life experience. Because, we don't have kids, and we don't personally... Well, I suppose you've got Quinn, your friend whose mother is a narcissist, and she's got children. But we don't have first-hand experience of this. And it's probably one of our most requested episodes is this. And we do... Yeah. Actually, should probably mention, we do want to do more on this topic.
Yeah, we're definitely going to do a deep dive on a later episode.
Yeah. And but we'd even like to get like input from people, like maybe audio clips of people like telling stories and giving examples, because we mentioned in the interview, but I think it's really, really good to get like actual examples of some of the stuff we talk about, because you mentioned, I think, that it's, we talk about a lot of stuff in like the abstract, so it's good to get like
real life examples. My mom did
this, and that's an example of this. Yeah,
yeah, so. And I think that's what we do with the concepts and stuff that we talk about. It's like we can talk about gaslighting, but it doesn't really make sense unless you feel like it's a real life thing.
You can sort of relate it to,
and an it's experience. Like tangible rather than just like and narcissists do this because they have a fear of abandonment or whatever. I'm just mixing up two different personality disorders. No,
I know what you mean.
So, yeah, the book is called The Bear. Just to finish off what I was saying before, she essentially wrote the book to help explain to her child why they're no longer in contact with their grandmother.
Young child.
And it comes from the premise of this bear and a mama bear and a cub who are kind of dealing with that toxic relationship and how to cope with that. And we just thought it was a really important message to kind of
put out there
and also hopefully to get some support around an independent writer. We'll
get into the interview. But yeah, stick around at the end and we'll give you details of how to find the book. And yeah.
Yeah, good to go.
Yeah. Welcome to the No Contact Club. While we are knowledgeable about the topics we discuss because of our collective experiences, we aren't professionals. We research what we talk about and our references are in the show notes. However, our episodes are not a replacement for professional medical help or advice. Our content can often be triggering or upsetting, so please, if you feel like you need support, you can reach out to us at thenocontactclub@gmail.com or see the links in the show notes.
Okay. But yeah, so maybe if you want to start by like just telling us telling our listeners a bit about yourself and your story, I guess.
Yeah, about how you kind of came to write your book and sort of the process in which you decided I'm actually going to put this down on paper to help someone else learn from it.
Yeah.
So I have a narcissistic mom. I don't know that she knows that. And I don't know if she's seen my book or not, but I have been no contact for 4 years, a little over 4 years, very proud of that. And it gets every year gets easier and easier because you build new traditions and all that. So that's wonderful. But I have kids. When I went no contact, my oldest was 3 and I was pregnant with my 3rd. And it was at her 3rd birthday that everything went crazy. It was building for a year, you know, it doesn't just come out of nowhere. But the 3rd birthday was the worst. I sent her off. We went to the zoo. I sent her off with some friends and she came back with my parents. They had actually like lured her away from the friends I had sent her with. And then I guess kind of carried her back to show me like, look what we did. I kind of counted that as kidnapping. Yeah. So I was a little upset about that, especially because they weren't speaking to me or my husband at the time. They actually came and turned their back to him when he went to
her. That's so messed up.
And so after that, within a week or so, I have within a week I had my son, and we sent a text because we were still, I guess, whatever, trying, and said my husband sent it to my dad and said, or my stepdad, and said she had the baby, and they never responded. And that's been that. So I've heard from them a couple times since. They've said they wanted to meet their grandchildren, which I've learned as a parent is a red flag. They usually, you know, they try to take the claim on the kid. So it's not your kid. It's my baby, my grandchild. And they've reached out a couple times since then. I think because she realized the other, maybe I wasn't responding to the manipulation with the kids. So she would send like me a birthday card, or she sent me like a cute ornament that was sentimental from childhood. Everything has gone in the trash. So I've been a wall on that.
Yeah, good.
So,
that's awesome.
Yeah. But my 3-year-old, I've read other people's experiences with it. And they say, you know, you just put the wall up, you shut down, and the kids get over it. They're little, they're young. My 2-year-old, or well, at the time, she may have, she doesn't really remember them now. That is her, that's the way her lovely brain works. But my oldest, her brain doesn't work like that. She remembers every single thing. She literally asked about my parents, I want to say a week ago. And it was in this context, she said, but then there's those other people, the strangers that we don't talk about, because we explained once she was 3 that they're strangers now, because we were concerned, what if we see them in the grocery store? You know, she's going to run right to them. And what if, you know, they come to the house and she's going to open the door for them and things like that. So, so we kind of had to re-identify them, which was kind of nuts because we saw them weekly, if not more at the time. So it was a lot for her to adjust to. And she would ask all the time, and you know how like the first year, 2 years, it can be really painful to have to talk about it, especially if you're like, you have to get in that mindset to be like, okay, I'm ready to. And it's more fun when you talk about trauma, when you talk about it with like in a comedic way. Like, so I have a cousin that went through a lot of it with me, and he's like a brother to me, so the two of us can talk about it and it's funny, and you know, you kind of might cry about it, you might laugh about it, but it's not a conversation with a 3-year-old where they're just like, well, why don't we talk to them anymore? Well, what's wrong with your mom? Where's your mom? So
it kind of reminds me of you setting boundaries with the kids that you're nannying, teaching them like what certain people fit within which circle.
Oh yeah. One of them, she's autistic, and we were going through, I think they're like colored circles, and it's like, there's like the inner circle is like just you. And then there's like family, and it's like, lists like, okay, well, those people are strangers, and we don't hug strangers, and we don't kiss strangers, but family, you might hug your family, or like,
and I guess it's like you're having to suddenly readjust
circles. So I mean, we're lucky that my in-laws are great. They're great. So they've been there the whole time. So she has them, and you know, there's actually, it's silly, but there's like a lot of cartoons and stuff like Caillou where they only have one set of grandparents. So it's nice that, you know, I almost feel like some of the world has adjusted to this and has kind of set it up. So like, you know, you can take people out of their lives and it's not as surprising. So that's kind of why I did it. So it's really short. It's to the point. It rhymes. So it makes it fun. And it just, know, you read the split, you're walking away from this person, and you can reread it over and over again. I don't know if it would be a favorite book for a kid, but I wanted the colors to convey the emotion of it. So I had my illustrator kind of do it in like a darker color. I said, I want the hardest part of it to just be basically colorless, just black and white. Yeah. And then to kind of come out on the other side with, you know, the color again. So,
yeah. But, I did notice the kind of the illustration tying into it like that, with it being kind of being, I was really struck by the imagery that went alongside it, because it did feel kind of like dark, but not overtly so for children, if that makes sense.
Yeah, like not too dark.
Yeah. Yeah. it's like what's the movie Bambi?
Yeah,
it's like Bambi. It's a kids movie, and you understand that it's a kids movie. You're enjoying it as a kids movie, but also there's this like other side to it where you're beginning to learn about things that aren't necessarily all roses and daisies, and trying to understand hard concepts.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, thank you. Compared to Bambi, that's very nice.
I guess it's good as well, because it kind of opens up for like more questions. So like, you know, you can read it to a kid or have a kid read it, and then if they go, but what about this, or how does that work, and then it kind of opens up the like communication lines, I guess, like if they're feeling confused about something.
I was gonna say especially because what in situations like that, you don't want to introduce them to anything that they aren't already thinking. Like, you don't want to put any, you know, so if they come up with the question, and then, okay, then we'll address it in a kid appropriate way, but you don't want to first go, let's talk about narcissism. Yeah. You want to do that?
Yeah.
like age appropriate conversations of
not like mommy was the scapegoat and like how do you
in fact you should listen to this podcast. Yeah. That's great. Oh, you'll man. Totally be able to understand. Because I one of my good friends, her mother, who is also abusive, her daughter ended up getting scratched across the face by her grandmother, and that was when she was like, okay, I can't have you around my child anymore.
Yeah.
And when she went to the doctors to talk about it, the doctor was just like, you know, don't bring it up, don't bring up the incident, but if she brings it up with you, just validate her and try and talk through with her in a way that she understands. Because like you were saying, if you're I guess if you're bringing it up with them and trying to force the conversation, that's kind of putting ideas in their head when you want them to kind of
just explore it naturally, like however it comes to them.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's just like they say, like when a kid falls down and gets hurt, if you react like, oh my gosh, are you okay? Like they're going to get scared. Yeah. They're going to react more. And if you react like, come on, you're all right, you know, shake it off.
Yeah.
They go, okay, this isn't that bad. You know, exactly. That your comfort with the situation gives them comfort.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I can't imagine though, that must have been really hard. Like, I know for me, like initially going no contact, like like you were saying, like we would talk about it, but if I can't imagine having to get on the level of a child and try and like think about it and put it into terms that they could understand when it's still like really fresh and like traumatic. Like,
it's definitely difficult, and especially because she's a Y kid. So like every question and every answer had another question and needed another answer. Yes, it's so beautiful. But it was just a lot of like actually stuff that I learned from like her preschool curriculum. Like they have like a kindness curriculum. So like kind is a huge word for them. So I just saying like they weren't being kind to us. They're not kind people now. And basically just addressing it in like the softest terms possible. The hardest word I think we used was stranger, just because like I said, we were very nervous about public situations, about them stopping by the house, and we actually had them stop at the house. We broke contact in March, and in January they came to the house and my oldest answered the door. So at that point things were incredibly tense. That day in particular, my dad had gone to my job, had looked for me, I think at school. I was an intern at the time, but I had to go to court that day. And so I wasn't in the building. And when I came back, to this job I had for like 3 months. They were like, are you okay? Because I'm 6 months pregnant and my dad's coming there asking security for me because he came to pick me up. And I'm like, this is mortifying.
Yeah.
And it was because I hadn't spoken to my mother since the night before. But I sent a scathing email that day that basically set all the boundaries and put all the walls up. And I said, if you're comfortable with this new arrangement, feel free to contact me. And I never heard from them again. I did send them the invite to the party. I sent them the text, or my husband sent them the text about the baby, but they were not. I didn't expect them to be comfortable
Was this boundary stuff, or even the concept of no contact, was this kind of were you researching this and looking this up before you did this, or did you do it and then you go, oh, okay, this is the language that I can apply to this situation?
So this has been what my half sister and I have done the entire time. Since I've been an adult, we basically have not been in contact with our parents at the same time. So for years. So I would go a couple years and then she would go a couple years, and she came back into the picture right when right around the time my youngest was born. And it almost just like washes over itself perfectly, like one in, one out. We were, my mother's very much the divisive kind. So she would, whenever I'm not around, she hears everything about me. Whenever she's not around, I hear things about her. And we've since, actually the day that the following me around town thing happened, the night before she had come, and she actually lives in Germany, so she's put some distance between them. and she came in for a funeral, and we had sat that night and had a conversation and actually learned a lot of things about our childhood that we were not aware of, because we're 7 years apart. I learned that she had like physical abuse and things, and I had no idea. She thought that I did know because I was still like in the house at the time. And by in the house, I mean still living there. I wasn't physically in the house at the time. We came to all these realizations, and I think that my mother realized that conversation happened, and that's why she was so desperate to track me down the next day to do damage control.
That makes sense.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
That must have been a very long conversation.
It was. Yeah. I thought she had never even met my kids at that point, because she had been out of contact for 4 years before that. And because of the way that we were, if my mom wasn't talking to her, I wasn't talking to her. Like that was. So she at least still maintains contact to a point. We're not close, but it's because we didn't grow up together. We're both very different people, but she is much more capable of handling, and I think it's why she experienced physical abuse. She's much more capable of handling mental and psychological abuse. She can, amazing. The woman should work for like the FBI or something. She cannot. And I break immediately. Like my mom's like, you look fat. I'm like, done. What do you want to do?
I feel like that's like you're like the one who's like, would cry like easily. And then I'm the one who's just like, fight me out on the street now.
Exactly. They used to call me Mona Lisa, and they would sing it at me for like crying. Yeah. So we're very different, and we've approached it differently. And that's how, even now, like, she doesn't have kids, and she'll stay with them when she comes in, and she borrows their car. And I say, how can you do that? Because I had to cut all strings because of the pulls that it would have. If I did any favors or anything, they would then take control of everything. So I had to, like, even before we went no contact, I tried to make myself financially independent. Even when I still lived at home, I wanted to pay my own car insurance. And I'm like, you guys have to, like, So she's the opposite. She takes whatever they're willing to give. And I said, how do you do that? And she goes, well, what are they going to do? Hit me? She's like, I'll just get in the car and leave. Like, and I was like,
that's a good attitude.
Why? Yeah, you're right.
Why not?
I would immediately cry. If they we handle things differently.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's crazy to me that, like, it's still crazy to me, even after doing this podcast for like a year, that you're describing things and the way that your mum would work, like knowing you two had had that conversation and wanting to do damage control in the same way that our mum would want to do the same thing or try and divide us. Like, it's still so nice to know that other people go through the shit too.
Other people are also traumatized.
Isn't it nice? Well, it's funny. I listen to everything in like maybe a week. I mean, I started a work from home job, so that helped. So I like was able to like, you know, sit on my computer and I had to have something going on. I found you guys right away. And I was, I think on episode 9, when I was like, I'm sending them an email. And and after that, I just like stuck with it. And I listened constantly until, and then when you guys, when I caught up, cause it was after you'd stopped for a little bit and I caught up and I was like, no. And I said to my therapist, cause I'm not close with my sister. I said to my therapist, I feel like I have sisters in New Zealand and I can't talk to them right now. They're there and they're like, we'll be back later. Bye. So I was like, now I was like so empowered by it. And then I was like, okay, I'm just going to wait. And then I had it on my calendar for June 3rd. And I think it ended up being June 2nd because yeah. You guys were all day ahead of us. So yeah, but so I'm very glad.
That's so cool. That makes me so happy.
It is the strange like sisterhood with people.
Yeah.
Like it's the emails that we get and like the conversations that we have with people like we're having with you is very much like, even though it's not constricted to a certain gender, but like the concept of a sisterhood, I think is a really
absolutely
powerful thing. Cause I think it's like a sense of solidarity.
Yeah,
and
like community.
And almost like will. Or like pride or something in our histories and in the choices that we've made going on from having a narcissistic parent.
And even though like not all of our stories are the same, like your stepsister experienced physical abuse and other people experience like horrific things, but we can all still like, I wish we could have like a, it's so like reminds me of Mean Girls, that why can't everybody all just get along? Like I wish we could have like, a big meetup and just everyone could come and hang out and like we can all just like collectively laugh about trauma. I don't know.
I'm sure your therapist would be great if you're like, yeah, let's all get together and laugh about our trauma.
I was like, Polly, that's not what you're supposed to do.
Oh, funny.
So have you written, because I had a little look online, but I found one of the books or two other books that you've written.
One of the books so far. I also have to pay my illustrators because I cannot draw that well. Mm-hmm. So that basically it's always just an expense at this point. Like I think I made like $30 and it was like $250 to make one book. So it's crazy. But I mean, it's not crazy. They do wonderful work. They deserve to be paid. Absolutely. but it costs money to get to that point. And I like, ideally I'd like to put something larger together. Mm-hmm. I don't know, like maybe now would be the time to do that. Cause I'm like, my job is very forgiving. So that's a possibility, but, the perfect for me, that was because I'm a perfectionist and I mean it in the negative way that Oprah talks about, not in the way people think it is, which is that you have to do everything perfect so that you don't get criticized. And of course that never works. So you live in this like constant up and down world where you're like, I got validated. Someone said I did a good job today. And then like someone beeps at you cause you don't move fast enough at a red light. And all of a sudden you're the most awful person in the world again.
Yeah.
So I wrote that cause my daughter came to me and said something about her eyes being different sizes. And I said, well, everybody's eyes are different sizes. I'm like, that's like, everything's different. I was like, wait, I was like, wait till you get boobs. So I wrote that cause I said, I didn't want her to feel like she should have to look a certain way or be a certain way. In fact, that everybody, and I thought it was cute and it rhymed and she liked it cause it has the word fart in it. So I got an illustrator for that one, so I'll put that one together. But the other one's like the pride and joy, because that's really more like what I want to speak to. And like from the same perspective as you guys, I don't have a degree in psychology. I think I took sociology. Like that's not the farthest that I've gotten. And that was in high school. So like
I was just saying, more with what you've got than a lot of other people would try and do, if that makes sense. Like I don't know, I don't want that to sound like I'm putting other people down for not writing a book, but like I think it's a creative outlet that you've taken to kind of voice really difficult conversations. And I think it will help a lot of people to be able to approach that conversation with
because your it can't child. Be easy. I don't know what I'm saying.
Let's just cut that. So I don't know if you have got it available now, but if you want, you could maybe read a page or two. Like you can decide.
Let me see what I can find quickly here on my phone. And to what you were just saying, Chloe, about the older kid thing, I've actually talked to a couple people. They're adults now who had narcissistic grandmothers whose family, like right around, well, necessarily not all of them broke contact, but they would kind of start to distance a little bit at certain points. But even if their parents didn't, they did, which is one of the things that I was afraid of for my kids. They distanced once they started to become individuals, because they, you know, you're still an extension, even as a grandchild, you're that extension of them. And if you start to, you want to go out on Saturday night instead of hang out with your grandma when she comes for dinner, you're going to feel a wrath for that. Mm-hmm. And, but it's around the age of like 10, 11, 12 that they become fully aware of it. And then there's a couple different ways they can go with it. Some of them are, they kind of just laugh it off with the rest of the family, like, haha, this is our trauma. Some of them get very upset with their parents because they're not protecting them from it.
Yeah.
And there's just all, and then there's everything in between. So, and it's all about the person. I think it's all about the character of the person, like how they interpret the situation, how bad it is.
So complicated. It's complicated enough without kids involved.
Yeah. And I think that protection part of it is a huge thing, because that was why Quinn, I think that was what, because she was still in contact with her mom for years after all the abuse that she suffered.
Yeah.
And it was only when her child was the one who was receiving a level of that abuse that she finally went, actually, I have to protect my child. Like
this isn't okay.
Yeah, this is outside of myself.
I think
now.
That happened for a lot of people. Yeah, I think that's the like trigger for a lot of people to change it. I mean, even my oldest, there was favoritism involved. Like when my second was born, they would call and say, "We're going to come pick up your oldest and take her out for ice cream." And I'm like, "Well, we want to give you a break. Well, you're leaving me with a newborn. Like that's not a break." So, you know, but they wouldn't take both. They just wanted one. And then they said they wouldn't babysit two. They would only babysit one. And when we got pregnant with our third and we told them, I had a little printout of the ultrasound and I put a bow tie on it because it was a boy. Cute. And it was the first boy. And so I was like, here you go. And I thought they'd be so excited because they had girls and then I had girls and now here's a boy. And they went, oh, geez. And they left the ultrasound on the table.
Are you kidding?
Just be excited about something.
But they've also never met him, and he's adorable. They're
cute.
Okay, how much of it do you want me to read? Like, what part and thing?
As much as you feel comfortable, like a couple of pages,
like the first page or so. I know it's very short because it's a children's book.
It's very short.
or something that like spoke to you a lot when you were writing it, maybe, or. Okay. Yeah, just honestly, go with the flow, and we'll be happy with anything. It's just to give a little like
teaser,
a teaser of what people can
say. I'll do my best. I don't know. Do you guys have Robot Chicken there? Did you have that show? I used to joke like the commercials that were the length of the show. Like I'm like, why do they have commercials? The whole show is like 15 minutes. That's what this feels like. Like I feel like I'm giving a commercial for a commercial. Okay, here we go. Okay. In an old rainy cave lived an old graying bear. She was grumpy and stumpy and was losing her hair. The bear had a cub, well, a cub she once was. Now the cub was a mama with her own cub to love. And though the old bear had grown grumpy and plain, the mama still hoped the bear would love her again. So the mama and cub would visit the bear, the grumpy and stumpy and graying old bear. Then one day the bear asked the mama to leave, but the cub wanted mama more than sweet treats. So the mama and cub left the old rainy cave, though the mama and cub missed the love that they craved. The mama knew now what she needed to do. She would be the best mama and love her cub for two.
So cute.
It's really cute.
It makes me like,
because I think also, what we were saying before about it being like this dark element to it, but also there's like this element of like love.
Yeah, it's so nice.
Like of
mm-hmm. cool. Like I mean, that's ultimately like why you chose to go no contact, just because you love this like mini human so much that you're like, okay, I have to look after myself and this person.
Yeah, and look after, what do you call it, my nuclear family.
Yeah, like your
unit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I just find that,
and I think too, lovely. I mean, like it, as you guys have have the experience, like, it's not always bad. Like, there's good times, you know, and you long for the good times. So like, you want to do things that will make her happy. You want to do things that'll encourage the good times to happen. And that's one of the things. I mean, when I got pregnant with my first, she was over the moon, and she would dote on me like crazy. She threw a baby shower for me. I've later heard from friends that that behind the scenes was insanity, but from my perspective, it went very well. And so when I first had her, I would bring her over and they would just like lavish her with everything, gifts and hugs and love and food and anything. They went nuts over her. And then when I had my second, and the disinterest kind of showed, and I saw the favoritism that I grew up with, I was like, that's red flag number one. And obviously it just got worse from there. But they, you know, and I know now too, especially with my second one having the wonderful little brain that she has, she is very defiant, and they would not, that would be going so badly. I would probably just let her go over there and be like, yeah, watch her, have a great time. Tell your grandma to die.
Enjoy.
Punishment enough. You're welcome.
Yeah. Yeah. This is retribution.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Well, I guess what we should do now is learn how to speak.
What was that you were saying about us being professional?
Everyone I've spoken to about this, by the way, wants you to know that you do have the sexiest accents. Whatever it is you think. Everybody has been saying six, because that's the way that six. You said six the first time, with six, like, yeah, the number six. But yeah, but it is. So
it just feels so embarrassing. Like,
oh, how funny.
It really is.
I can't hear our accents as anything other than...
I know that over in the US you guys got Flight of the Conchords.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we love it.
You know Rhys Darby, the ginger guy? That's just what I think of when I think of the New Zealand accent, of just some dorky New Zealander dude going,
now he's doing all the voice acting, so he's all these really like quirky cartoon characters that really just make it so much worse and higher pitch,
and he's kind of like what do you call it, like pigeonholed? No,
yeah, a little bit,
like, because he's got like a quirky kind of voice and sound. He's kind of just gind of okay, I'm just going to do quirky characters that
in a weird capitalize New Zealand accent. On
my accent.
Yeah.
That's all I can think of I think also it's because of the fact that so much of the media that we consume over here is either from the UK or from the US.
Yeah.
So it's with, I think we're comparing our accents to what we consider the norm, which is English accent, American accent.
Yeah.
When really.
Yeah.
It's nuts. Anyway. Thanks.
I love the I'm speaking for you, the Boston accent, Boston, like Boston. Mm-hmm.
Like Mark Wahlberg.
Funny. Just to stereotype some some people.
So do you want to tell
people? You should do a show where you just try every accent.
Yeah.
We're done with it now, we're gonna try others.
So. Yeah, yeah. It could just totally confuse people.
It would just offend people. Yeah. People just be offended.
Ellen's really good at accents. Her mum is Scottish, and she moved to Australia when she was three and grew up there and had Ellen. But her and her mum talk in like a Scottish accent, and they'll flip from like an Australian accent to a Scottish one like nothing.
They'll be having a conversation with each other, and you'll be watching them, and they're like, "Oh yeah, I don't know,
I'm not gonna
Australian accent." Conversation, and then it's like mid-sentence she'll just suddenly switch, and it'll be like,
you're like, when did
I was happen? Gonna I was gonna try it a Scottish accent, but I'm not gonna try a Scottish accent anyway.
I can see it in my mind. I can see
it's not a visual thing, guys. Just use your brains.
So do you want to tell people, we'll put it in show notes and stuff, like where they can find you and your books and stuff like that.
Yeah, so right now it's on Amazon. It's available on Kindle. So it's great for like tablets and stuff like that, because I know that my kids are like glued to tablets.
Yeah.
And it's simple. It's pretty easy to read. So they, and it's short. So it's like a nice bedtime book if you have one of the kids like mine that want you to read it several hundred times.
Yeah.
Or over every single night. It's also something that like your older kids can read to your younger kids, which is really nice. And I, one of the things I like about it is that I feel like it gives me comfort as the parent reading it to my kid, because I feel like it's validating my decision. Cause obviously on the bad days, you think maybe this is a mistake, maybe they should have the grandparents, especially, like I said, we're very lucky we have my in-laws, but if we had no one else and it was literally just our nuclear family, feel odd. So, you know, this gives that, the opportunity for the parent to also feel some comfort from the book at the end of it.
I never thought about it that way.
Because
it does, I mean, for us without kids, there's always this aspect of kind of, you almost like forget the bad stuff and you just start to remember all the good things that happened. And so you kind of go, was it really that bad? Oh, she always used to do this really nice thing. Maybe I'm just, and you start like gaslighting yourself.
So sometimes like I'll ring Portia or we'll ring our other sister and be like, do you remember this? Was it this bad? And then we'll be like, yes, it is. Don't let yourself go back there. Like, it was bad.
So I think that's a really sweet kind of notion of you're reading it to help your child, but also you're reading it to like solidify that decision in yourself and
that you've made the right decision.
Validate your kind of feelings there. That's really sweet.
Okay, well, I think that's it. Is there anything you want to say, or
you guys are doing an awesome job,
thank you, keep
up the good work. So I know it's got to be hard to like go through it all the time, but you know, like just be super grateful that you guys have each other, because that's huge.
Thank you. That's so awesome. And thank you so much for joining us. Like, thank you for being
from the past. That's where I'm coming from.
It's weird, eh?
Yeah. And
coming from the past, being our time machine.
Test dummies.
Yeah, our test subject for interviews.
Yeah.
Happy for
overseas interview. And I know there was a few lags in response time. And so we're kind of like,
it's pretty impressive though, like honestly, it's doing a good job.
I mean, New Zealand, like the joke is like that New Zealand's like 10 years behind the rest of the world, but like honestly sometimes it feels like that, like the Wi-Fi is slow or but
no, I think it was okay. It's good. We're just like bagging on New Zealand, like don't ever
shitty accent, shitty Wi-Fi, like
those are the two main things. Just bad accent and Wi-Fi.
Oh,
but thank you so much for joining us. Like we'll include all of the details of finding your book on
the show notes.
On Kindle and stuff in the show notes for everyone. Because
awesome.
I think it's a really awesome thing as well for us to kind of push to our listeners to like support an independent writer as well.
Especially because we
became my illustrators.
Especially because we don't have experience around having kids, so like this is awesome that we can be like, hey, here's someone
who's been through the go talk to this person.
Been through it,
and because I always feel like we want to have the stuff that we talk about be less abstract. And by less abstract, we need to put real life examples behind it. And so so thanks for being our example.
I'm sure you have plenty of other listeners with kids, but if you ever want like more specific, I got examples, for days, even though it was 3 years, you know how much stuff can happen in 3 years.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, I think that is it.
Yeah.
Hey guys, so that's the end of the episode. Thank you so much, Amy, for agreeing to come on and talk about your book. It was really awesome. Thank you guys for listening. We're going to do a deep dive on parenting when you've got a narcissistic mother or father, I guess, at some time in the future. So keep an ear out for that. The link to Amy's book is in our show notes. You can find that there and maybe think about purchasing it if that's something you might be interested in. That would be awesome to support her. So thank you very much. Remember, you can email us at thenocontactclub@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook with the same name, and on Instagram too. We're at the No Contact Club. Yeah. Thank you very much for listening, and stay classy.